This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Okay, here we are in The Think Tank. Mike O'Neill here with Mike Russell. This week, sort of political potpourri, a little bit of smorgasbord, some of the quirkier aspects of politics, things you maybe hadn't thought of. First couple of segments, our guest here is Paula Pennypacker. She got whopped along with a whole lot of other Democrats.
Come on now.
Facts are facts. Man. You ran in a heavily Republican district against John Kavanaugh, but we'll talk maybe a little bit about that. But mostly I want to talk about your take. Democrats sort of deserve, and many people are saying they deserve the weapon they got. What do you think?
I totally agree with that. Totally agree. Those that ran against our president deserve to lose.
Example.
Let's talk about Allison Grimes against Mitch McConnell. Really? She couldn't take out Mitch McConnell. She wouldn't even admit that she voted for our president. So, yes, absolutely. I believe she deserves to lose. When the Democrats have a track record that the Republicans would envy and we don't shout it from the rooftops, then there's a huge problem with the Democratic Party.
What else was left unsaid in this campaign?
Well, I think that there's numerous things that President Obama has done that's good for the economy. We were talking about that one article, and what did they cite here? There was a whole litany of things in there.
Unemployment for one.
Unemployment,
we have short memories. We forget what it was.
Right. The GDP is way up. So,
well, here's the thing: when you run on GDP, honestly, when you run on GDP, if you put 50 voters in this room right now, maybe three will get GDP.
You're right.
Right,
the eyes glass over. You're
and
right.
So no. He could have just rocked on GDP every single year of his presidency, and still no one would know.
They've got to feel it for it to matter.
Amen.
And I think this is some of the issue that we have. Some of the things that are occurring in the economy are ultimately decades long. For example, the ratio of income that is held by the lower 10% versus the upper 1%. Those figures have been going south, but they've been going south since about 1980. They are not the product of any one presidency.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. If the Republicans were in power, and you've seen this over and over again, they would be taking credit for it. But by the way, it wasn't on the tip of my tongue, but the unemployment figures was 7.8 to 5.8. That is something we should be screaming from the rooftops.
Yeah. But if I'm a Republican strategist, I bring back underemployment.
Yep.
I talk about the people dropping out of the market, and really what the unemployment numbers come from and what they look like. So when you say that the Democrats would stand up and say, this is what we are going to run on, we're going to stand with President Obama, and you talk about the economy, it's the individual's economy. Isn't the national. It definitely isn't D.C.'s economy. D.C.'s economy is banging. Everything's on firing on all cylinders over there. But here nationwide, here in Arizona, not so much.
I think Paula's point is that not that there isn't a counterargument, but that the Democrats didn't make their point.
Right.
And had this been on the shoe on the other foot, the Republicans, there are things that they would have been able, they would have communicated. I think they're better communicators.
Really?
They are more on message.
You
absolutely.
Think so?
Absolutely.
Now, which party is better?
The Republicans are more on message.
Absolutely.
There is a message that comes through. It's singular.
Yes. And if they make up the message oftentimes, okay?
Goes back to Harry Truman. I mean, I'm not a member of an organized party. I'm a Democrat. That hasn't changed a whole lot since.
Okay, from the right side, I would say you poll most Republican voters in this country, they would say that the Republican Party's scrambling. They would say that the Democrats have been a unified front all the way through this entire thing. They're the ones that have been on point. I think that's more a popular view.
See, as a new Democrat, I was Republican for 30 years before I made this switch.
I do.
I would say the only thing the Democrats at this point in time have going for them is that we're less fearful than the Republicans. You know, the Republicans do operate on a platform of fear. You do get that, right? I mean, it's mostly a platform of fear.
I don't know who isn't in Washington, honestly. I don't know who isn't.
Well, and that's
about
I'm saying.
ISIS. Tell me ISIS and the 31,000 people that are going to storm. That came from the White House. So when you say the Republicans only deal with fear, no, I think all of Washington and all of our government profit from that fear, and they never let good crises go to waste.
All
so
right.
To, speak.
To that point, I also want to get back to your original question in that let's not talk about GDP or employment. Let's talk about how tens of thousands of people now have affordable health insurance. Why aren't we screaming about that from the rafters? Why? Because all the Republicans want to talk about is repeal and replace. And I can tell you, as a Republican, I held out for almost 2 years waiting to see what does replace mean. And we better see that in the next 2 years.
I haven't heard the replace part. I've heard the repeal part.
Exactly.
Just take it down.
They'll spout off or blurt out tort reform. Well, John Kavanaugh, in my LD, has made it clear that we can't do tort reform. The attorney lobby is just too strong. So it's all just right-wing talking points and no action. So now it's time for them to lead.
I spoke with Senator Flake a couple of months ago, and he was talking about the replace part of that. And he said, as far as the Senate is concerned, we have several bills that are replacing.
Where are they?
They're sitting on Senator Reid's desk is what he tells me. I can only take that at face value. I don't know. He said, it's
Senator Reid's out of a job. We'll see what happens now.
You know what? They have no plan. They have no plan.
I'm just taking them at their word.
I got to tell you, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it discussed. I haven't seen anybody. That's surprising to me. But that would be a change. One thing's for sure.
Be a breath of fresh
air. Senator
Reid
is not going to be able to keep this tabled. If there's something there,
time will tell. January will tell.
It is very clear who controls the legislature, other than the fact that this last week the Democrats did exercise their 41 vote majorities.
As somebody who was a candidate out there, people are not happy about the Republicans cheering for people not to have affordable health care. So they better have a plan. You're absolutely right.
It's tough to take something away. And I think that's why the activity to kill Obamacare sort of in its crib was so intense. I think it was a recognition that once this thing, people actually get the policy, and I'm not sure about what we aren't past that point.
It's a lot like we saw with the president this week when he was announcing his points on immigration. And the Republicans immediately said he's got 10 points. We hate all 10. We don't even know what they are. We hate all 10. We're not a fan.
They hate everything.
And okay, now understand this. And instead of them saying, and this goes to Obamacare as well, instead of saying, well, hey, let's sit down and talk about the stuff we like. I mean, there's got to be at least four in here that we like. Let's talk about that. Let's put them to a vote. Let's get them through. Let's
do this
the right way.
It's
the same thing with Obamacare. It can't just be one or the other. There are parts of Obamacare that are good. I will say that. Let's talk about those and how we accentuate
them. I totally agree.
I read a real interesting piece about this week, and it said the reasons why the liberals have incrementally done better on policy issues is they cater to interests, the Republicans cater to ideology. And so, for example, Obamacare, which probably represented 10% of what the liberals wanted, went through. The Republicans, instead of wanting to chip away at what they don't like, they want it all or nothing.
Exactly.
And let's stay on this. We're going to be right back right here in the Think Tank on KTAR News.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Okay, we're in the Think Tank here. Mike O'Neill with Mike Russell and Paula Pennypacker. Interesting article came out this week. Uber, which is this alternative to the taxi service. Republicans love this because it is the ultimate anti-regulatory kind of business, essentially. One of the untold things, while Republicans rail against regulation, a point about Uber is it illustrates that most onerous regulation in this country is not federal, it's local. Try to start a cab service. You go into a regulatory quagmire. And that has been Uber, which, in case you haven't heard of it, is a service whereby you get a smartphone app and you call. And there are a number of independent contractors out there who have the app. And basically, they're all independently working. Uber is sort of a meeting service, kind of like the eBay of taxi cab service. And the local cab companies hate it because they have a regulatory monopoly. Well, the CEO of Uber made a speech this week, and he said one of the things that makes a business like this possible is, in fact, Obamacare. And the reason he stated is that all these people can afford to work for him because they don't have to work for large corporations who previously were the only people who could provide health care.
I got to tell you what, when I read that, I jumped for joy. I almost just leapt across the table when I was drinking my coffee. And here's why. As a small business owner, that is key to our success in that we're not over that 50 employee mark. Okay. My business, for example, the only two full-time workers are myself and my husband, and then we have two or three, and sometimes more for seasonal help part-time workers, okay? What this does, what Obamacare does, and again, it's not perfect, is it gives people that opportunity to be entrepreneurs like we are, or to their insurance becomes portable so they're not stuck in a dead-end
because
job.
You, as an individual can now buy policy.
Exactly. I've been a small business owner since I was 20 years old, and I took care of my own insurance, and that was part of my operating expenses, and that was what I had to do. My wife and I both were independent contractors, two kids. We had that as part of our
expense.
But
you're an independent contractor. You're not stuck with an employer who they're there because they need that insurance.
I don't need someone else to pay for that. I didn't say, I'm going to leave, so I need the government to subsidize my health care because I made a choice to leave.
Wait a minute. Obamacare is affordable health care. Some people get it subsidized.
Affordable is way relative.
We're working on it. It's not perfect, but we're working on it.
Big thing. You were what, under 40? No pre-existing condition. Try to get.
I have a litany of pre-existing conditions.
Well,
a litany.
I tell you, as somebody who's had them, which is almost anybody over 50 has had. You can't.
I was diagnosed with cancer.
Prior to Obamacare, you could not get a policy that didn't have an exclusion for anything that you've ever had.
Right.
In other words, rendering the policy useless.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Like I said in the last segment, I believe there are parts of Obamacare that are good. The pre-existing conditions, yay, don't start with the kids having insurance because we should have handled that with S-CHIP. You know my feelings on that. But I think there are some good things there. But
you know the only way we got pre-existing, the only way the insurance, in terms of, you know, the insurance idea is that everybody throws money into a pool and it all gets shared.
Yeah.
The reason the insurance companies excluded pre-existing conditions are, one, they could get away with it. You know, why not take out anybody who's going to have high claims? The only reason they could economically afford to do it, and it was, this is sort of, you know, you want something good, you got to pay for it, was the mandate. Without the mandate, you can't excluded pre-existing conditions, because then the only people who get insurance are people who are sick, and it will be prohibited.
Okay, this was health insurance reform. It was not health care.
Oh, absolutely.
Reform.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's
a fair point, Mike, that this never was health reform. It didn't change anything about the health system. This is an insurance.
Okay, good.
Remind you, this was a Republican idea. This is Romney care. So this is why my theme of my campaign was restore sanity. Okay, it's insane. It's insane for the Republicans to now just hate Obamacare when in fact it was a Republican idea.
Well, it was a Republican idea in response to Hillary Care in 1992, which would have been a more governmental solution than Obamacare. They came up with the alternative out of the Heritage Foundation. That alternative that they came up with, it was pretty darn close to what became Romney Care and ultimately became Obamacare.
It's total insanity. Absolutely. And again, it is not a government takeover of our healthcare system. I would be opposed to that. It's a reform that's in the private sector. And like you said, insurance reform.
The other thing is interesting about this, and it's back to the point I was making as we're going to break last time. This wasn't the Democratic ideal plan. They decided to take, you know, a quarter or a tenth.
They wanted a single payer.
They wanted more. But on issues like this, the Democrats have been willing to settle for a piece of what they want.
That's called compromise, thing.
Well, and the point that is made is Democrats have gotten a lot of things because they take a little here, a little there. The Republicans haven't been saying, let's tweak and let's take out some of the worst things of Obama. They say, let's take out the whole thing. And the point made about this article is when you want all or nothing, you tend not to get it.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why my mission is to turn the state purple. I don't think we're blue or red, and I don't think the future is blue or red. I feel that the solutions to the serious issues facing this country is going to be found center left and center right. And that's where I'm going. And granted, I was not successful this race, but there was a clear contrast between, you know, John Kavanaugh and Paula Penny Kenny Packer in that race, and I hope to continue that debate.
Politically, though, that's politically you have to understand. You're right. The way to fix this country is center left, center right. Absolutely. I will not argue. You're going to get a lot of argument from other people. For me, no, you're not going to get a piece of argument. You know, but we see that CNN's tanking, Fox News lighting on fire, MSNBC lighting on fire. The polarity that we see in this country and the continue to see in this. We see Facebook, social media now dividing itself up into groups. Everybody living in their own little bubble in their own little world.
I know.
Center left, center right is going to be a thing of the past.
I
don't agree with that because here's the deal. I think what they're doing on Fox News is just fanning the flames of this white male hysteria.
So is MSNBC. They're going the other side.
Hysteria.
They're the other side. They're flaming racial hatred, racial divide.
Yes,
they're
yes.
doing that. Fox News is doing the ivory tower stuff. It's just the way.
You know, the hard part, I think,
go for that.
To put together a center movement is there's not money there. You can inflame
point.
The left or the right.
Good point.
With these emails that we all get about, oh, the world is going on fire because the other side just did this. There is no big pile of money for the responsible, sane kind of centrist. Let's have a consensus on things.
Not yet. It's a building process, like you and I discussed before the program. 8 to 10 years. It's a building process because you're right about that. But it's going to take more than money to stop us.
But here's the deal. When you say 8 to 10 years, a lot of people hear this language. They hear 8 to 10 years, we're going to take Arizona's red state and turn it blue instead of the purple. And the purple is still, to those on the right and on the left, still, especially if you're talking about a blue state becoming purple, it's terrifying to a lot of voters.
Right.
And terrifying, most importantly, to the ones that are voting.
I don't think
the ones that are dead set in their ways.
Right. 8 to 10 years is not to go blue in Arizona. Absolutely not. It's 8 to 10 years purple.
We're keeping her. I don't care. Okay. This is fun. We're having a good time. She's staying here. She's more with Paula Pennypacker when we come back here on the Think Tank, KTAR News.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Okay, back in The Think Tank, Mike O'Neill, Mike Russell with Paula Pennypacker. Okay, we have a politics that's divided. Republicans think of Democrats as godless, unpatriotic, Volvo-driving, finance, France-loving, elitist latte guzzlers, okay? Democrats dismiss Republicans as ignorant, NASCAR-obsessed, gun-fondling, religious fanatics.
Now, that sounds hot. I
think that's the caricature that both groups have of the other. I think it's it's hyperbolic, but not an unfair statement of belief
systems.
There's
always some truth to all of it.
There is research that's come out that suggests that this is not just belief systems, that this is deeply embedded in who we are, that this is correlate. For example, that they have done studies that have actually gone down to the level of brain scans and looking at the way people who have different, you know, liberal and conservatives react to things that actually stimulate various areas of the brains. Conservatives in particular are very sensitive to anything involving threat or danger. And so it's not much of a leap from that to defense spending, secure the border, and big prison populations.
You know, I don't understand that because I used to be a Republican who bought into all the rhetoric, hook, line, and sinker. But as I grew older and was out there, you know, pounding the pavement more as a political activist, I started to realize that it was a bunch of rhetoric. What they've done is they've been successful at making mud stick. For example, the word socialist, a huge problem Democrats are going to have to overcome. Let me think. Okay, what does amnesty mean? Ask a conservative. What does amnesty mean? They can't even tell you.
It's a red flag.
So these are
it's a red
all,
flag. You're waving a red flag in front.
These are all one or two word slogans that have just stuck.
No, all that may be true, but the point of this, I'm talking about a Scientific American study where they actually took conservatives and liberals and did MRI brain scans. And the way they were reacting to things, and this is not just speculation about attitudes, they're actually looking at brain parts of the brains that are lighting up. And that this doesn't necessarily mean everybody, but these differences, when differences are at that level, it suggests that a reaching consensus in the middle is going, because not just are we dealing with different fact sets, but that we are almost like biochemically relating to the, and I think this is research that's clearly at a very early late, but if we're looking at stuff and our brains are reacting differently to the same fact sets, then that makes consensus very difficult.
I would say it does, but you understand this, the number two fear in America, number one is public speaking, okay? And I think as humans, the second greatest fear is change. And changing who you are, and understand this, if it is something biological, if it's something in our DNA that makes us either conservative or liberal, if it is truly that, we have a lot of changing to do just to go to center.
Interesting. Yeah, that was one of the areas where there was difference in these studies. Conservatives fear change more than do liberals.
I think that's the big elephant in the room, no pun intended, but this, and again, as a former GOPer, aging white males are terrified that their cultural dominance is leaving them.
Give me
they
my
are
country
more concerned,
back.
As we're seeing with this executive order with Obama, they're more concerned about, you know, their cultural dominance than our security, the security of our country. That's dangerous. And that's why I'm cheering the president on. He's got to do this.
I'm not going to wholeheartedly disagree with you, but I will push back a little bit. And when you hear Republicans and conservatives, a lot of that is a religious base, tradition and belief. It is you stick to it. Maybe you can't prove it, but you stick to it. And that is why when you say the older white base or whatever, they've come up in their world believing in a certain set of core values, and that's what they're sticking to. I don't think it's as nefarious as you claim it is, that they're holding on to their power. I think a lot of it is that this is just their belief system and they're sticking to it.
No, I totally disagree. Here's why. Because when I first joined the GOP, I was right out of college. They were... back then, even the party bosses were cigar smoking good old boys. So sure. I've kind of kept thinking, oh, they just have to die off. But 30 years later, we're still here. I mean, and then we have what people are calling this great white freak out when Obama got elected. You know, I mean, it's insanity.
But the Dems have been staying in power this long too. The re-election rate for incumbents on the Democrat side is just as much as the Republican side. They're holding and clinging to their power just as much as the Republicans.
You raise an interesting thing about religion and politics. 30, 40 years ago, political scientists studied this, and you had Catholic Democrats and Protestants were Republican. That doesn't matter anymore. You know what matters in the area of religion? It doesn't matter what religion you belong to. The thing that predicts is how often you go to church. Heavy churchgoers are Republican. Light churchgoers, you know, occasional or never, tend towards Democrats. And it's tied to this whole thing. Religion is stability. It's tradition. And to the extent
it's a belief. It's something that you can stick to. If you show you can stick to something, then you can definitely stick to my party. And I think that goes on both sides as well. But we talked about this about, I would say, almost a year ago. There was a great article that came out of CNN that said that was talking about atheism is the last taboo in Washington. Atheism
Absolutely.
Is the last. You can be gay, you can be an adulterer, you can be whatever you want to be. You can be out of the norm of what we would say with our elected officials. But if you say you're an atheist, you are taking a walk.
I believe there's one atheist in Congress, and she's from Phoenix.
Okay.
I think she's the only one.
Who's that?
Kirsten Sinema.
Kirsten.
Is it?
I don't know
about
that. I didn't know that either. I didn't know that about her. I've talked to her several times. I didn't know she was about atheists.
And all that's great. And again, as a former GOPer, we have a separation of church and state for a reason, okay? You can have your beliefs. And I love Pope Francis. I'm born and raised a Catholic, okay? But just keep your religion out of the body politic.
That would be a fundamental difference also. I think that is a Democrat, now more of a Democratic liberal kind of position. The conservatives and the Republicans, mostly conservative, but overlap, obviously, tend to believe that politics ought to be part of the expression of their religion.
All right. Well, I think that's why the GOP is a dying party.
Well, maybe. But I think if you ask that question to a core group of conservatives, you're going to find a lot. No, I will. I've seen interviews that go like, I'm voting against my self-interest because I'm doing it for religious reasons.
Well, the blue wall is growing and there is going to be no stopping it. There's a lot of youth enthusiasm, not a lot of money yet, as we discussed, but
That blue wall took a hit last week.
It did. It did. But you know what? They won the battle, but they haven't won the war.
Look, the youth have been there forever. The youth have been liberal forever. Our collegiate system from coast to coast is full of it. I was a part of that as well. As part of that, I ran to the Democrat side in college, came back to the Republican side. Now I'm a libertarian when I start really making sense of all this stuff. But I think it's always been there. I don't think saying that, oh, there's a bunch of young people here for the Dems. There's always been young people for the Dems.
And they've never voted.
There's something different about this.
There's
a different feel, and as a new Democrat, I'm starting to feel that.
Define that.
Well, because, for example, I pointed out that picture behind Wendy Davis, who was running for governor of Texas. No, she did not make it. But if a picture is truly worth 1,000 words, you look at that picture, there was, 14 on up, you name it. And then you go over to the GOP and you see a bunch of 65-plus flag-waving white people, okay?
Mm-hmm. That vote.
And that vote, absolutely.
And you've always seen that. Yeah. And by the way, those 65-year-old flag-waving people were probably on sit-ins during Woodstock and all of the trust. They were as liberal as they were, and they became conservative. I don't think they're going to die off in generation of blues are coming up.
Having lived through that period, I tell you, that was not universal. That generation was split.
Okay.
The half of that generation didn't go to college, and they reflected very conservative values that I think have persisted.
Huh.
I think there's more than generation there. There was a split back then.
And by the way, those people behind Wendy Davis, those young people, they went home and they had to pray with their family at dinner and stuff like that. Trust me, the mom and dad will win that battle. I don't feel a giant youth wave coming over.
You know, I do. I heard some talking head yesterday on TV say something to the effect of, that generation, we're going to see not a picture of JFK. We're going to see a picture of President Obama, because I truly believe when we get out of this
the
craziness, the insanity,
right,
and we truly look at what he's accomplished, he's going to go down as one of the greatest presidents in our lifetime.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Can't end a segment like that, because you and I are going to have a talk after that. That's the craziest thing I've heard in a long time. More coming up next right here on the Think Tank, KTAR News.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Okay, I've climbed back into my chair now. Almost passed out.
Well,
Pennypacker said before the break, if you missed it, can go ahead and recap and please do it. Please do it in a way that doesn't make me hurt.
Basically, I said that the younger generation, instead of having a photograph of JFK, they're going to have a picture of Obama.
JFK, by the way, that would run as a Republican today. JFK was about smaller government. He was about military.
He would not be allowed in today's GOP. There is no.
He wouldn't be allowed.
Ronald Reagan would not be allowed.
He would be Ron Paul today, is what he would be. No, neither side would want him at this point.
Well, I think you got to look at the content. If you talk taxes, for example, Kennedy cut taxes, but we had marginal incremental rates at the time as high as 92%, which was the Republican argument about taxes being a disincentive to production makes sense when those rates are 92%. When those rates are in the 30s, that's a non-starter kind of argument. If I get to keep 62 cents out of every dollar, that looks pretty good.
If we're going to bring up taxes, let's all agree, the three of us. Let's hold hands and let's agree on this one. Because it seems to be, we went over the stereotypes of Dems and liberals and Republicans a little earlier. But when it comes to taxes, Democrats stereotypically want more money. They want to raise taxes. They want more money for this program, that program.
That is sticking. I disagree. I'll explain.
Stereotypically.
Yep.
It could be fact or fiction.
Exactly.
That's the optics of it.
We've never seen
all.
A tax we don't like.
I will say this.
They want to spend it on different things.
But that's mud that has stuck, and we got to get rid of it.
Worried about how you spend it. All three of us right here can say that the government does not spend money wisely. They are not good stewards with our money in most part. Can we agree on that?
Obama has been better than most.
I'm not worried about who's doing what.
But lately,
I'm talking about the government as the government.
He has not been spending like a drunken sailor Bush did.
I think that's too broad. You got to look at that. You got to look at that.
This ride. Get me out of here.
You got to look at that item by item, because if you approach this and say all government spending bad, you're going to cut. Let's put on the green. I'm as cheap as they come. Okay, put on the green eye shades. Let's look at program by program. What are we doing?
And then ask us for more money. And that's what I'm saying. And then
cut,
say we need
eliminate
to raise
what necessary.
That's not true.
I mean, just totally eliminate.
I'm not saying
asking for more money. No.
Republicans and Democrats spend money poorly. That's what I'm saying.
I can agree to that.
Don't come to my wallet and ask for more tax dollars without showing that you are operating at peak capacity financially.
Well, here's the thing. You got spending that the biggest fattest thing I can tell you. How about military spending on stuff they
budget in half.
The problem with that is so protected. There is such a wall of protection over that of individual Congress. Say, wait a minute, those tanks are out in the desert doing nothing. Those are built in my district.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm telling you the defense budget should be slashed.
But if you're prohibited with doing anything anywhere else in the budget until you get rid of that, that is unfortunately an impenetrable wall.
Okay.
Don't make legitimate spending that's necessary contingent upon cutting something that is politically so protected that it's never going to happen.
I want to bring this back to the local level because all politics is local. Let's talk about Arizona's economy for one moment.
Okay.
Republicans have been in control for the last 40 years.
Yes.
Okay. They have cut taxes 24 of the last 25 years. So question I asked my opponent
state
for the last 20 years, they have cut taxes. We have a struggling economy lagging behind most other states. So where's the trickle down? Where's the jobs that these Republicans love to talk about?
If you're talking about the state of Arizona, there's one thing I really have to point out. And this was the people vote and anti-tax requires a priority to ever raise taxes. That sounds good. Here's the problem. We cut taxes in good times. When Janet Napolitano was governor, we were in fat city. State revenues were going up 9% a year, and we cut taxes every single year.
Mm-hmm. She's a Democrat, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. And that was her deal with the Republican legislature.
Sure.
I will let the legislature cut taxes a little, but we're going up 9% a year. I can still get money for all-day kindergarten, things like that. That works real great until the economy collapses in 07, 08. All of a sudden, the state is it's almost impossible. You can't ever get 2/3 to vote. There is a 40% automatic no
vote. Send it to the people. That's what I liked about what Brewer did.
It was the only choice she had.
Okay, good. And she sent it to the voters. And what the voters do? We did the right thing. Arizona did the right thing. Mm-hmm. We raised the 1%. I hate the one penny tax. It's so gibberish.
Okay, but I did not vote for that tax increase. Here's why. As a small business owner, why is it fair that my small business has to pay almost a 10%? Sales tax, consumption tax, and people like Amazon, giant corporations, pay zero.
So my tax
is going to keep going up and up and up. Why some companies pay zero? No, the plan should be lower and broaden the consumption tax.
Well,
lower it and broaden it, make it fair for everybody, and there'll be plenty.
She's talking my language.
That kind of idea. Good,
Paula. Good job.
Yeah, yeah.
What things about the sales tax? It is the most regressive tax there is. Unfortunately, the easiest to sell to people because of the language that Mike
one
just
penny.
Mentioned. Well, it's only a penny.
Penny! Yeah.
No, but now,
when you buy a car, it's more than
it
a penny.
But I'm talking about lowering it, not raising it like that one penny tax that it kept raising. The thing you're going to love about it, we get the pimps, we get the drug dealers, we get all that illegal. Right now, that's all tax-free, the black market. Till we stop the black market, whether you're talking the border or drugs, we need to get that money at the cash register so we have money to operate our states.
You lost me on that.
She's saying legalize it all?
What's that?
Legalize it all.
What's that?
Prostitution, drugs, everything.
No, we have to have an intelligent comment about when you say legalize, it freaks people out.
Okay.
As I saw in my race, you use that word legalize and people just lose it. I prefer to use the word decriminalize.
Decriminalize. And you look at we're seeing it right now. Well, we saw it this week with President Obama. There's certain things that you can go after.
Decriminalize. I think I would put that argument in terms of how much taxes we are paying to imprison people
exactly.
for petty drug.
Yes,
we are paying, and that is not a cheap expense.
The pimps, though, they straight to execution.
Is where the young kids are going to be totally behind the Democrats.
Yeah.
The Republicans aren't going to touch that issue with a 10-foot pole. They're going to continue with criminalization, and we all know about private prisons.
The young are libertarian in terms of social issues,
it's my people right there.
Yeah,
it's my people too.
But, kids.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, you have been so great here in going along with Doc and I's spiel here. A couple minutes. We have about 2 minutes.
Let us, by the way, tell people where they can get copies of earlier podcasts.
Well, okay, go ahead with that.
KTR.com has the last couple. MikeO'Neill.org has all of them archived back to forever. Michael J. O'Neill on Twitter.
There you go. Okay, now Paula Pennypacker, you happy now? You got your commercial?
No, I got my commercial in.
All right, now Paula Pennypacker, where can we find out more about you? And then give me your vision for running. I'm sure you're going to run again. Let's talk about it.
Well, right now, my vision is to rebuild the Democratic Party here in Arizona. Until we close that voter registration gap, until we get more PCs elected, if you want to run for PC, contact me at PaulaPennypacker@AOL.com.
PC, explain.
Precinct Committee Man or Woman. We are way outnumbered in terms of our PCs in comparison to Republicans. So what I'm going to be focusing on the next 2 years is closing that voter registration gap, getting people fired up. People need to start paying attention to their government. When people don't pay attention to their government, that's how one extreme, whether you're right or left, gets in control of our government. Right now in Arizona, unfortunately, we are in control of right-wing extremists.
Democrats in Arizona. That's a near-endangered species.
Now, hang tight. Now, all the Republicans listening are just freaking out. What do you mean rebuild the Democrat Party? Hold on. There's some benefits there. And I'm not liking Republicans or Democrats. I'm right down the middle. But I'll tell you this. There is a benefit in a red state to building up an opposing party. What that does is it strikes a little fear in the Republicans, and people start to realize they have to come to a middle or they're going to go the way of the brain.
That's why voters in Massachusetts regularly elect Republican governors.
Yeah.
So, 'cause keep somebody with an eye on the
Republican. Yeah, I've been a good government activist for 30 years. If for me, if it was all about getting elected, I clearly would not have re-registered Democratic in my blood red district LD23. No, for me, this is about good government. And you're absolutely right. We need to balance it out. We need to have two healthy, vibrant parties, Democrat and Republicans, so conservatives and progressives can have great conversations about how we're going to solve the serious issues facing our government.
How about just ditch both of them? We just get rid of Republicans,
yeah,
get rid of Democrats.
System is rigged. Not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
We have laws that say you have party primaries and all that. As long as we have that, we have two parties. And independents have a negligible influence.
Exactly. When I am king, this will all change. Don't you worry about it.
I'm voting for you.
I appreciate that.
I'll be right behind you, cheering you on.
I'm running for state mine inspector, though. I got to hit that first. Paula Pennypacker, thank you so much. On behalf of Doc O'Neill and myself, Mike Russell, this is The Think Tank on KTR News.